Is Amy Knutson here?
I haven't seen her, but
I haven't seen her.
It's loaded, though.
Oops.
It's loaded.
All right. All right, thanks, and thanks for having me here. By way of background, I was Phil's third PhD student, I believe, behind fourth. Oh, Ramsey. But I arrived at ASU sort of as a escapee of the University of Arizona. I don't know how many people know that, but I actually followed my future wife to a new location, and so kind of got into the back door at ASU and wasn't even aware of Phil or his work until I took a class from him, and immediately realized that this is kind of a direction that I would love to follow. And I was fortunate enough to convince Phil that I had a project in mind that was worthy of his attention. And I think this was a period when Phil was maybe a little less selective in his grad students. And so fortunately, I was able to get in. And I've really been a beneficiary of Phil's remarkably prolific penchant for building successful instruments that go to Mars. So it's been so good, and the work environment has been so good that I never left. So I'm one of the few that hasn't left the nest because the nest has been so comfortable and the work environment so appealing. And so again, I'm the beneficiary. And what I want to present today, please take note that most of the data and images even that I'm going to present today are all from these instruments, and it's a real testament to the availability, the quality, and the ease of use of these data, at least some of them, that I'm able to present this this work today. How do I drive? Just enter. All right. And this work is really an outgrowth of an amazing set of spectra that were first presented by one of Phil's grad students at the time. And note, this is a science paper from early on in the mission, and this shows Phil's willingness and generosity to let students even take over on major discovery papers. And it's remarkable that these canonical spectra that emerge from that work still are the source of debate and science even today. And really what I'm going to talk about today is this result here that suggests that this surface type 2 has a major glass component. Now, this glass component, of course, is what has been controversial for nearly a decade now. And I'm going to be focusing literally on just one of the features of this spectrum, and it's partly because this is a good part of the spectrum to look at from both orbit and on the surface. There's very little dust contamination, either from orbit or surface dust in this region, and so it's a very fruitful sort of pursuit to literally focus on a single feature. And here are some lab spectra, again, from Phil's laboratory where we've been able to develop the instrumentation to make these measurements. Here we're I'm showing two natural glasses and a synthetic pure silica glass to give you a sense of what we can measure in the thermal infrared with regard to these features. And it's this combination of stretching and bending modes of silicon and oxygen, and when there's aluminum in these obsidian basalts, they contribute to the change in the positions and the shapes of these features. And so at long wavelengths, this is the area that I'm focusing on. This area, although certainly usable and interpretable, from orbit there's a lot of dust contamination in this part of the spectrum, and so I've just allowed myself to sort of focus here and see what I can see. And just for comparison, here's that test type 2. Now, you can't just do this verbatim sort of straight interpretation, but this is intended to give you some sense of how this feature in test type 2 correlates to this bending mode of the silicon and aluminum oxygen molecules. So here now I'm showing primary versus some other secondary phases, both an amorphous phase, opal, and these crystalline phases. To give you a sense of what we're dealing with from orbit, for example, when we exclude a portion of the spectrum where CO2 in the atmosphere is so absorbing, we essentially have to exclude it. But on the wings of this region, it's not entirely opaque to the surface, so you can get into the surface. But the point here is there's a common feature among all of these phases, both primary and secondary phases, in this roughly 465 wave number feature. If we could see all the way to the surface, we could see that these phyllosilicate phases have a really nice doublet in this location that you would not confuse these phases with some of these other phases if you could see all the way down to the surface. On the surface, by the way, with mini tests, we are looking for this feature, but I just wanted to draw your attention to that feature at 465 wave number. And I've since Phil and I did a paper just last year, I finally wrote it up, in which you can just take that single feature and map it across a planet, and it has some remarkably coherent spatial distribution that's very similar to the Type 2. So this essentially is a Type 2 index, but it really is an index of various phases, both amorphous and crystalline phases across the planet. And I sort of want to take you through some observations that I've been making in recent weeks that I think sort of lend themselves to this debate about what it is we're seeing in Type 2 and elsewhere. So I'm going to start with Gusev Crater, because to me this is a place that represents basically an existence proof, really, that there are indeed amorphous phases on Mars. This is the home plate feature in the Columbia Hills. Most of you are probably familiar with this. It's an ash deposit burying some kind of hole in the ground, maybe a crater, maybe a hot spring, we don't know. These boxes represent the observations, the locations we measured with mini tests. And I've mapped in, based on PanCam, how far I think these silica deposits extend just based on morphology. The spectra that we get, now I want you to know that it's not just a trench in the ground, a trench in the soil that we found high silica. We've been measuring these nodular outcrops, as we call them. They're very eroded and oftentimes dusty and soil covered, and yet I've been able to get some really impressive spectra out of this material that sort of is found in these different locations. So in black is a spectrum from mini tests. Of course, another of Phil's instruments. And in red, I'm using Opal A, the amorphous version of Opal. That's what the A is. And that's from a hot spring sinter. And the quality of this fit is really remarkable. So to first order, we're seeing an Opal A type material in these outcrops, as well as that soil deposit. Now, what's really impressive about finding Opal A on Mars is that on Earth, you don't find ancient Opal A. It's always converted to chert. It usually goes through a cristobalite-tritomite transformation. So you just don't find ancient Opal on Mars, on Earth. So the very fact that we're not seeing, and by the way, the spectrum of a chert phase, of a microcrystalline phase, is very distinct, except for in the long wavelengths, by the way. But in this part of the spectrum, you would never confuse an Opal A phase for a chert phase. So we are seeing ancient, and I'm not sure how old this is, but it could easily be a billion years old or more in the Columbia Hills. So we're seeing amorphous material that's persistent to this day. Now I'm going to go to the strongest and biggest expression of this 465 index. I'm going to probably call it a type 2 index every now and then. But here it is in Vestitis Borealis, and we knew this from Josh's work, and we already know, you know, sort of what Vestitis Borealis is all about, but I kind of want to take you through some of the observations. First is that I've got a mock wide angle underneath, but here are some tests, albedo data, that show this is among the darkest places on the planet. These are very clean, dark surfaces down in the sort of 0.08 range. But look at the, you know, there's some heterogeneity here, and I want to draw your attention to one of these locations where, you know, you can see variation in the albedo. And here's a Themis Vis image that shows what that variation is attributable to. So you got, there's a little crater there that's essentially free of this dark stuff, and that dark stuff is dunes. So this is the Vestitis Borealis dunes, and that's what we're seeing essentially that's varying the albedo in this part of the planet. So this is a really interesting demonstration of the relationship between the mobile material and the albedo. And here is that same place with this index, and exactly the same place we're seeing this clear variation in this index. And so this is telling me that the 465 index material that bears this is the dunes, not the lighter stuff around it. So here I've taken a ratio of the material, the lighter material against the dunes, and that's the black spectrum compared to the type 2 N member, and you can see the quality of that fit. So essentially we're seeing type 2 material in the dunes, but not elsewhere. And look at the quality, the depth of that feature is even stronger, because it's probably such a pure example of type 2 in this location. There is no doublet here. That suggests there is no phyllosilicate dioctahedral phase in this material. And I just want to point that out, that this is not a feature of the ground. That's still a residual CO2 feature. But here we are seeing type 2 material in the dunes, but not elsewhere in the Vestitis Borealis formation. My attention was drawn to this blob on this map of mine. I didn't know it was Bonestell Crater until I went and looked at it. But you can see there's a little blue blob where this index is not firing. And there is Bonestell Crater, which is this impressive, fairly fresh-looking rayed crater in the middle of Acidalia. Albedo-wise, this is still a dark part of the planet, but there is some expression of that rayed crater. In fact, you can see even thin wisps in the albedo of this image, which I thought was pretty cool. But here's the index now. It's showing a low where the ejecta and even within the crater, the index is not firing, but everywhere else it is. But then on the bottom or the mound of this crater, the interior peak and floor, the index is lighting back up again. And here's a single ground track that shows that. And so what's happened here is that there's dune material. There's dunes and presumably sand that hasn't formed dunes, but it's presumably creeping over the rim of this crater and getting in. So this, for me, is driving home this idea that type 2, both in Vestitis Borealis and in farther down in Acidalia, seems to be a mobile material. You know, is all of it the same mobile material? I don't know, but this is at least one example where type 2 material clearly is mobile and clearly is getting around and sort of going into craters for us to see that expression. Neely Patera represents, we saw a little bit of this, it represents a bookend to this story about mobility. Here's the mole image. This is Neely Patera in Syrtis Major. And here is the index map. We knew this going in, even before I had this index put together, that there are two hot spots in Neely Patera where this type 2 material seems to be dominant. And this was one of the early targets for Themis. This was known. We knew this was going to be a good place to look with Themis, and sure enough, it didn't disappoint. And this is from Phil et al.'s paper, where you can really see the expression of this type 2 material. And the deconvolution of the test data for this really made a good case that there's a lot of glass in this material. It has a strong feature. Now, what's important here is that this is not mobile material. Look, here are the dunes in this case, and in this example, it's not the dunes that are carrying that signature, it's in-place material. So this is, at least is an existence proof that type 2-like material can form in place as outcrop. Marth is my last example, and this is some of the most recent work I've been doing, and probably most people realize that the Omega first and then followed by Chrism those data sets have identified phyllosilicates of various flavors here in this, actually outside of on the rim of this vallis. And for years now, really, we've struggled with why isn't TESS seeing an expression of this? This is the largest occurrence of phyllosilicates. This is a place on Mars that is these occurrences are among the brightest highest albedo. They approach 0.2, 0.22. Most of Mars, by the time you get above 0.2, it's dust covered. But this is a place on Mars, based on this test dust cover index that I've developed, this is one of the brightest and least dusty places on Mars. So this is in itself an interesting, unique place. And now here's this index, and I'm only showing the highest values. And we are finally sort of seeing this correlation. Can I go back and forth? Let's see. There's forward and backward. How do I do that? Okay. So anyway, this was an exciting sort of result that we're seeing correlation now, at least with this index. So this might be an example where TESS is seeing a phyllosilicate expression in this 465 index rather than some amorphous primary secondary phase. So there's a lot more work to come out of this. I'm on the trail of using this index, sort of following up on the other data sets from Omega and Chrism. And so the conclusions for this, from this work, for me, again, is this idea that We're absolutely seeing amorphous material, some of the least resistant to devitrification. We're seeing opalae on the surface of Mars that could be billions of years old. So that actually is telling us something pretty dramatic about the aqueous environment following the precipitation of this material. So we are seeing amorphous material. This test type 2 is we're seeing again and again that for the most part it doesn't seem to be associated with phyllosilicates. So it's probably a primary or a secondary amorphous silicate in most of these locations. And now I'm starting to wonder about this issue. Is type 2 material transported? You know, we're certainly seeing it in the dunes in the north, and is that material coming into the south? And this is an issue that would be appropriate for discussion with Ron, presumably about the transportability of silica or sand for that distance. And then finally, I want to alert you to this new result and that there's going to be a lot more to come. So that's it. Thanks a lot.
The next presentation is entitled Many Tests at Meridiani Planum, an overview of the opportunity.